The baby making years are hard. I'm Dr. Sterling, and I'm here to help. Welcome to the Ask Dr. Sterling podcast.
This content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or qualified health provider with any medical questions you may have.
Welcome back to the Ask Dr. Sterling podcast, where each week we'll be bringing you exclusive content from our Sterling Parents membership courses, preparing you for everything physical and emotional for pregnancy and postpartum. These are the top listened and most popular lessons from inside our courses that we are bringing direct to you while Dr. Sterling is hard at work developing all of the new content for our Sterling Parents mobile app coming in summer 2025. I hope you enjoy.
All right, my lovely, let's talk about the do's and don'ts of pregnancy. So in this lesson, we're going to cover the Sterling Parents philosophy, food, beauty, and activity do's and don'ts. So if you went through the trying to conceive course here inside Sterling Parents, then you are familiar with the Sterling Parents philosophy of centering your wellness. And I want to emphasize the your. Okay. When you're making decisions in your pregnancy, I want you to keep your overall wellness in mind. And you are the one who's able at the end of the day to make the decisions about what is best for your wellness. So this will come into play when we're talking about things like we'll circle back on this concept when we're talking about sushi. Okay. Because what tends to happen in pregnancy is that we overestimate the impact of things that we ingest and we put on our bodies. We often underestimate the impact of our internal state. So we will be really cautious about not eating this, not putting that in our body. But when it comes to stress and to, putting perfection on ourselves and being hard on ourselves, we're much more prone to be okay with that as we are to go against one of the food rules. So I want us to keep our wellness at the center of every decision that we make. So we are going to talk about foodborne illnesses, toxin sources, caffeine and alcohol, and then some beauty and products and care first. So foodborne illnesses are a very real concern in pregnancy, and we're primarily worried about listeria and toxoplasmosis. And so these are the medications, these are the foods that we want to avoid in order to give ourselves the best shot of avoiding listeria and toxoplasmosis. Now, all food has the risk of foodborne illness. It is impossible to get a food that does not have that risk. It's just a reality of eating. What we're doing here is we're trying to avoid foods that have a slightly higher risk than the average food for listeria, toxoplasmosis, or other forms of foodborne illnesses. That's what we're trying to do here, okay? So if you have one of these items that is on this list and you don't get sick, it's not that that item in and of itself is dangerous. If you don't get sick, okay, you're okay. But if it's just that you're higher risk of getting sick from listeria or toxoplasmosis with these items. So we want to avoid unpasteurized milk and cheese. Pasteurization is the process of heating up substances to kill the bacteria, kill off foodborne illnesses. So in the United States, most of the products, the cheeses and the milk that are on the shelves are going to be pasteurized unless they specifically say they are not. However, when you go to a farmer's market or you go to another country, they may not have that labeling. So you want to be very careful specifically about milk and really the soft cheeses if they are not labeled, if it doesn't say that they're pasteurized or if it says that they're unpasteurized because these can carry listeria. We also want to avoid hot dogs and deli meats as much as possible. Now, hot dogs, if you heat them up and if they're steaming, hot dogs and deli meats, you can eat, okay? But what happens is there's this temperature that hot dogs and deli meats are typically at where listeria can really grow and perpetuate at that temperature. So heat your hot dogs up, heat your deli meats up. Refrigerated pate or meat spreads, same thing. Refrigerated smoked seafood, same thing. Unwashed raw produce. We want to wash our fruits and veggies well. About 5 to 10 seconds of cold running water is good. If you have things like lettuce, taking apart the pieces, or celery, taking apart the pieces and making sure that each piece is watched individually. If you have, let's say, a salad and it says that it is pre-washed, you want to be really cautious about washing it again, because those salads, those pre-washed salads, truly are washed. And if you introduce it then to your sink that could be contaminated with, you know, say you had some raw egg in there earlier, some shells from raw egg, or you had, you were preparing chicken, you could potentially reintroduce some foodborne illnesses to your produce. So, you know, be cautious there. Then raw or undercooked seafood, eggs, meat, and poultry, you want to be cautious with those in pregnancy. So let's talk a little bit about sushi. So sushi is one of those, I wouldn't say it's a hot debate, but it's definitely a debated food do and don't in pregnancy. So it's because in some countries, such as Japan, women are encouraged to eat raw fish and to consume raw fish during their pregnancy, because fish is good for you. There's a lot of wonderful things in fish. However, in the United States, it's recommended that you don't eat raw fish. And you don't have raw shellfish. And that's because of the increased risk of foodborne illnesses in raw food. So sushi is not in and of itself a huge risk for listeria or toxoplasmosis, which are the two big ones that we're trying to avoid, but it is a higher risk for other foodborne illnesses. And the idea is, like, you don't want to get a foodborne illness in pregnancy, even if it's one of the ones that just makes you sick and have diarrhea, but doesn't actually impact baby, as long as you're okay. So this is, you know, to me, this is a personal decision, and this is a place where you can center your wellness. I tend to stay away from raw fish in pregnancy, though I have had a few pieces of sushi when I've been, you know, gone out to a sushi dinner with my husband. I've stayed towards the, you know, vegetable tempura or some miso soup. I've had things that were cooked, but I've had a few bites just, you know, because I was so hungry and they look so good. So I think it's okay. You don't have to be perfect on all of these things. Well, this is all about mitigating risks. And remember, we're just trying to reduce the risk of foodborne illness, and all foods have an inherent risk. So centering your wellness is okay when it comes to eating these different things. So let's talk about caffeine and alcohol. So research suggests that 200 milligrams of caffeine a day or less does not cause miscarriage or preterm birth. Important to remember, a 12 ounce cup of coffee is about 200 milligrams. So you're not going to have a cup of coffee this big, but you can have a smaller cup of coffee. And then in terms of alcohol, there is no known safe amount of alcohol. We know that alcohol causes fetal alcohol syndrome, which is not something you want your babies to have. But we don't know if there is an amount of alcohol that you don't have a risk of your baby having fetal alcohol syndrome. So yes, in some countries, pregnant people drink more alcohol, and that's considered normal there. In the United States, because we can't say, you know what, if you have one drink a week, your baby will be okay, we can't say that. And so we say, we don't know a safe amount, so we recommend none. Okay, so let's talk about another issue with food, and that's that sometimes food itself can be a toxin source. So mercury in high doses and higher doses can be toxic and can impair fetal development. So we don't want to eat fish that are high in mercury. So big eye tuna, we stay away from, king mackerel, marlin, orange ruffy shark, swordfish, or tilefish. And then we limit white albacore tuna to 6 ounces a week. Now, the other important thing to remember when it comes to toxins in pregnancy is the dose makes the poison. There is a toxic dose of everything. Oxygen at a certain dose, toxic. Water can be toxic at certain doses. So sometimes you'll come across accounts on social media or posts on social media talking about, oh my gosh, there's all of these toxins and all of these products that we use all of the time. To understand that the dose makes the poison. So just because something can cause, you know, severe cellular damage at higher levels, such as oxygen, at the normal levels that we breathe in every day, it's not a problem. So it's just important to remember that you can't necessarily trust everybody who's freaking out about toxins on social media on the internet. Okay. So some places that we can avoid those extra toxins, and some of the ones that we want to keep an eye on are phthalates, perfluorinated chemicals, pesticides, BPA, and parabens. So we can avoid these by avoiding plastic water bottles. And that doesn't mean that you can never drink out of a water bottle. We want to not freak out about every single little potential source of toxin, but you might not want to buy a case of water in plastic water bottles at Costco every week and let it sit in your back seat and then just be drinking water out of those bottles that have had the sun hit them all the time. Okay. But once in a while, having a bottle of water that's plastic is okay. Try to avoid microwaving plastics. You want to wash your fruits and vegetables, as we talked about. You can consider buying organic. Organic does not mean that it's pesticide free. It doesn't. They just use different pesticides and lower levels of pesticides. So you still have to wash them. There's no data that shows that organic produce, that people have better outcomes for their babies with organic produce. It is more expensive. It's not necessary. It's just something if you're trying to minimize pesticide exposure as much as possible, you can do that, but you still have to wash your fruits and veggies. And then avoiding non-stick cookware can be good. So Teflon, has perfluorinated chemicals in it, and especially if it's flaking or peeling off, then it's a definite no. It's not as much of an issue if it's not flaking off, okay? If it's not getting into your food, it shouldn't be transferring. But just something to be aware of. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about beauty products and care. So really, the only ingredient that is like do not use in pregnancy is retinols. Okay, so it goes by different names: retinol, retinol palmate, palmitate, retinol acetate. So basically, we know that when with medications like Retin-A, when it's actually orally consumed, we know that it can be a teratogen, meaning it can cause birth defects. We actually don't have data that shows that topical retinols cause problems, but we extrapolate the data from oral retinols to topical. So that's the only hard no that you'll come across. Now, you may find people that say no to salicylic acid, glycolic acid, and benzoyl peroxide. However, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists says that these things are okay. Salicylic acid is a similar to aspirin, and so that's why some people, because you're not supposed to use aspirin in pregnancy, but we actually do use aspirin in pregnancy. We just use a lower dose than's typically used for pain. So no, we don't use pain level doses of aspirin in pregnancy without a doctor's supervision, but we do use lower levels of aspirin, baby aspirin, or even double the dose of baby aspirin. So we use between 81 to, 100 and 62 milligrams. So we do use some aspirin in pregnancy. So salicylic acid, topical salicylic acid, is actually okay. And then there's other things you should probably avoid: hydroquinone, which is a skin lightener, oxybenzone, which is mostly gone from the market, but it's a sunscreen ingredient that's an endocrine disruptor, parabens, this DMDM, hydantoin. Check your products. It's okay. I wouldn't go overboard or really stress yourself out about this. Do your best. Okay, so let's talk about some hot topics: hair dye, spray tan, and nail polish. So hair dye. You can get your hair dyed in pregnancy. Hair itself is dead protein. It can't absorb anything that would then get into your systemic blood supply. Okay, so you can dye your hair. Where we caution people is letting hair dye sit on your scalp for long periods of time, because then it could be absorbed by the skin on your scalp. Not that we have, again, we don't have data to say, hair dye, if you let it sit on your scalp, it causes X, Y, and Z problem. We just know that there's some chemicals that we wouldn't want to orally ingest in hair dye. So probably they could be absorbed by the skin. We don't know. Let's just avoid them. So it is okay to get your hair highlighted, your hair dyed. We just don't want hair dye sitting on your scalp for long periods of time. If a little bit gets on, again, you don't need to freak out. So spray tan. This is a really, really common question. You know, you want to go on your baby moon, get that little golden glow. Definitely don't want to be getting tan in the sun or in a tanning bed. Please, please don't do that. So spray tans. So the, you know, in general, again, no data on this, but the main concern for me would be inhalation, because when you get a spray tan, you're also inhaling this. So if you're getting a spray tan weekly, that's a lot of exposure to something that we don't know if it could cause problems with fetal development. So I would caution you from getting regular spray tans, especially if it's not in a really well-ventilated area where you're breathing it in. Now, spray tan solution isn't really absorbed much into the skin. That's kind of how it works, is it kind of stays on the surface. And so I think a spray tan here and there is not the end of the world. I would definitely, if I was pregnant, I don't think I have ever gotten a spray tan in pregnancy, but I would, especially just getting one. Not something I would do regularly, however. And then nail polish. So, you know, you don't really absorb much at all through your nail. You can use nail polish if you want to use non-toxic nail polish. Sure. Again, no data to guide us here. What some people will, you know, when some doctors will caution is at the end of pregnancy, when we're getting closer to delivery, you may want to think twice about doing gel nail polish on both your hands and your feet, because sometimes we need to do something called a pulse ox, where we actually measure your oxygen saturation. We need to go through the nail to measure that. So, you know, gel at the end of pregnancy may be something you want to stick away from, but as long as you have, you know, a finger that you could take some nail polish remover to and take off, that should be enough for us to get a pulse ox. Oh, the other thing with gel, remember that gel is cured with UV light. So if you're getting gel manicures or pedicures, please put sunscreen on your hands, because you can get a lot of sun damage. And we're more prone to hyperpigmentation or darkening of the skin in pregnancy because of the high levels of estrogen. Now, when you're making decisions about hair dye, spray tan, nail polish, remember, center your wellness, and self-care is important. And if, you know, part of your self-care, one of your self-care rituals is getting your hair done or getting your nails done, it's okay. You can find a way to continue to do this in pregnancy. You don't have to completely get rid of this self-care ritual. Okay, so let's talk about some exercise and activity precautions. So these are the exercise/activities that we recommend people think twice before doing in pregnancy. So contact sports, any sport where you might be hit in the abdomen, we don't want direct abdominal trauma in pregnancy. Scuba diving. So scuba diving, when you go down to deep depths in the ocean and then you come up, babies can get ascension sickness. Okay. So when you come, if you come back up, it's a whole physics thing, but basically the nitrogen in your blood can then turn, you know, it can precipitate out. It's a whole thing. So we don't recommend scuba diving in pregnancy. However, snorkeling, where you're just kind of going along the surface, A-okay. It's just the deep diving and then the coming back up that can be problematic. Hot yoga is something you want to think twice about, especially in early pregnancy. Okay. A lot of people, get lightheaded and they pass out, they fall, they hit their head. You want to think twice about doing hot yoga. Skydiving, you know, it's a lot of speed. There are accidents. So, and then horseback riding, you know, people fall off horses and it's a lot of bouncing up and down. So, and it's a lot more force than you would generate, just like from jumping up and down on your feet. So that's something to consider. And then really anything that has the risk of direct abdominal trauma or a deceleration injury. So that's why roller coasters and fast and kind of jerky rides aren't recommended in pregnancy, because we don't want, if you're going quickly and then you stop abruptly, that can impact the attachment of the placenta to your uterus. So we want to stick away from that. Okay, so some other exercise and activity guidelines in pregnancy. You should be able to talk while you're exercising. That means that you're able to get enough oxygen for yourself and for baby. You want to stay hydrated and listen to your body. If it hurts or you feel lighted, it's time to stop. And when we do that, when we are really in touch with our body as we're engaging in activity, we're strengthening that mind-body connection skill, which is so important in pregnancy and in parenting. Okay, so in terms of the benefits of exercise in pregnancy, we have some really good data that 150 minutes of moderate intensity aerobic exercise, like cardio, per week can increase your chances of vaginal birth. It lowers the risk of gestational diabetes, blood pressure problems, low birth rate babies, and preterm birth, and also can lower the risk of postpartum depression. Now, I have always known this data. Since my first pregnancy, before my first pregnancy, I knew about this. And yet I had a really, really hard time exercising in all of my pregnancies because I was so symptomatic, especially my last pregnancy, lots of back and pelvic pain. And so there are certainly, pregnancies and people in which doing 150 minutes of moderate intensity aerobic exercise every week is just not going to be possible. And there are conditions in pregnancy where exercise is contraindicated. So if your provider has told you that the exercise isn't a good idea, then please don't feel like you're doing something wrong or hurting your baby. Know thyself. Be a friend to yourself. Do not be hard on yourself just because you can't do this. I have never been able to follow this guideline, even though I wish I could. And I wish I could have, offered these additional benefits to my pregnancy, but it just wasn't something that I was able to do. So we want to make sure that we are being gentle with ourselves and forgiving ourselves. You are doing a great job. I will see you in the next video when you're ready.
Thanks for listening to Ask Dr. Sterling. Is there someone in your life who would benefit from listening to this episode? Send it to them. If you've left a review in Apple Podcasts or Spotify, thank you so much. Please send me a DM at Ask Dr. Sterling Podcast on Instagram with a screenshot so I can say thank you personally.